received a 3-day respite, as he'd been too weak to do more than slurp soup, sip water, and sleep. But now there was no dodging it. She decided to face it head on. "Well, there was a horse attached to a cart, and you were in the cart. The horse pulled the cart, and here we are. I see you haven't lost your sense of humour, sister. It's a permanent attachment to my body, lest I fall into despair. Anise, Archer, I'm the king. I need to know what I missed. I'm ready to lead again, to rule. About that..." She was saved by a knock on the door. "You may enter," Arch said, sounding kinglier than he had since reawakening. Sir Metz entered, bowing at the waist. As usual, his silver armour was so well polished, Anise could see her wobbly reflection in it. "Good evening, Sir Metz," Anise said. "Allow me to formally introduce you to my brother, Archer. Archer, this knight was responsible for your protection many times while you slept. May I present Sir Christoph Metz?" "Well met, sir," Archer said. "Thank you for your service. Now, what can we do for you?"
"Do for me?" Metz asked. "Nothing. I serve the kingdom."
Arch cocked his head to the side and glanced at Anise. She shook her head. She could explain the knight's eccentricities later. "What my brother meant was, why have you disturbed us so late?" "That's a rude way of putting it," Arch muttered. Metz looked right at Anise when he said,
"Apologies, Your Highness. May I have a word?"
Frozen hell, Anise thought. Could he be any less subtle? The answer, of course, was no. Sir Metz was about as subtle as a stampeding mammoth in trying to enter a castle by a small door. "Of course," Arch said, sitting up straighter. Anise saw a flash of pain cross his face, but then it was gone, hidden behind her brother's calm, confident expression. "Whatever you need to say, you can say in front of my sister." Metz looked at Arch, then back at Anise. "Yes," Anise said, hoping to salvage the situation. "Speak freely in front of both of us." The knight raised an eyebrow, but then said,
"A stream has been received from Darin. There is a storm gathering strength in the east. It looks to hit Castle Hill directly."
"We have weathered many storms before," Arch said. "Why are you telling us this?"
"Because we have delayed depart—"
"Thank you, sir," Anise said. "That will be all." The knight, seeming almost relieved, bowed again and departed the way he'd come, leaving them alone once more. Anise avoided Archer's stare as it bore into her from the side. "Why did he stop answering my question upon your command?" he asked. Anise said, "There is much I need to tell you."
"Then tell me."
"Just like ripping off a bandage.
I had a name day, Archer. I'm 18 now."
"And?"
He still didn't get it. Still hadn't thought things through enough to understand.
"I guess that's what happens when you're brought up assuming you will be king some day.
And you've been unconscious for more than a fortnight."
"A fortnight? That long? I suspected, but I couldn't be certain."
"I think I understand what you are saying."
"You do?"
Anise was surprised at the lightness in his tone.
"Of course, sister. My injury didn't dim my wits. You've been leading my soldiers, haven't you? Knights like Sir Metz have been obeying your commands while I slept. They're in the habit now, and we haven't formally returned the torch to its rightful holder.
Archer, tell me everything. The sooner the details are filled in, the sooner I can return to the throne and decide the next course of action."
"It has already been decided.
I will be going north into the hinterlands, along with Sir Metz, Sir Dietrich, Sir Jonius, and maybe some others. We are going to find the sleeping knight."
Arch frowned.
"Enough, Japes. I'm no longer in the mood."
Anise sighed. She could understand why her brother would think it a joke. The 1,000 sleeping knights were said to have been the elite soldiers of the early Northern Kingdom, established shortly after the first Gaerics had splintered off from Western rule, declaring their independence. Anise's ancestor, the 4th Gaeric ruler, King Brown Gaeric, was said to be a strange man, a superstitious recluse who dabbled in sorcery.
After his elite squad was formed and trained, he'd supposedly found a way to grant them immortality, so they would always protect the North from invasion. However, what he didn't know was that once they were made immortal, they would leave him for the hinterlands. According to legend, they'd left because they were not truly needed, and only when they were called upon in the North's true time of need would they awake from their slumber. That was hundreds of years ago. Anis sighed again. It was no jest. His frown deepened. The first thing I will do is revisit this decision. On whose authority was it reached? On mine, Anis said, rising to her full height and jutting out her jaw. Under Northern law, you have not yet reached the age of rule. I have. I am the queen now.
3. The Northern Kingdom, east of Castle Hill. Taryn Shiri. Taryn, the man known by most as the Armored Knight, wished he wasn't so good at killing.
Maybe then I wouldn't have had to leave. Maybe then I could have been happy.
You look like you want to curl up in a ball and sleep, Faye said. He glanced at her sharply, but the blacksmith who'd designed both his armor and weapon, the enormous spiked ball attached to a chain known as Morningstar, wasn't looking at him. Instead, she peered forward through the wall of lazy, fat snowflakes that obscured much of their vision. Taryn sighed. He should have kept his helmet on. He wasn't used to his emotions being so easily deciphered. But back at Castle Hill, he'd finally grown used to having it off, to people seeing the real him, the monster. Fay, much to his chagrin, was undaunted by his pale, translucent skin, nor the dark, protruding veins filled with blood as black as tar. When he'd removed his helmet, she'd given him the barest of glances before nodding like she'd suspected as much.
"Sleep does not come easily to me these days,"
Taryn admitted.
"Because of her. Because of what I did to her."
Taryn, in his heart, knew Anis would be better off without him. Safer. She was strong, the strongest woman he'd ever met, stronger than him in a lot of ways, despite the supernatural blood running through his veins. Then again, if harm were to befall her when he could have protected her by staying, he would never forgive himself. He didn't know what he would do, the very idea sucking away his breath and spreading poison through his black veins. The memory of the last night they'd spent together felt like needles in his skull. "Nor to me," Faye said, washing away his thoughts. Taryn immediately felt bad. Since the moment they'd departed Castle Hill, he'd made this journey all about him. Well, about Anis, too, but mostly about him. About his self-loathing, his anger, his fear, his pain. But Fay, he knew, had demons too, else she wouldn't have left with him.
"Why can't you sleep?" he asked.
She stopped abruptly, clamping her mouth shut. Taryn stopped too, watching her, waiting patiently. Her boy-short hair was hidden beneath a woolen cap, her grey eyes darker than usual in the waning light. It was so quiet he could hear the soft rustle of snowflakes landing on the ground. It was the calm before a major storm, he suspected, an unintended metaphor for whatever was to come. Fay started walking again, silent. Taryn fell in beside her. He knew what it was like to have secrets. He wouldn't push her to reveal them. Though he'd intended to make this journey alone, slipping away from the castle surreptitiously, Fay had caught him on the way out. Without having to ask, she'd known exactly what he was doing. "I'm going with you," she'd said, and he didn't have the energy to argue. It was like the entirety of his reserves had been spent writing his goodbye note to Anis. "Where are we going?" Faye asked now. He was surprised she hadn't asked sooner, but for a while she seemed content with simply knowing they were going away.
"Darin," Taryn said.
It was the first time he'd admitted it aloud. Faye frowned. "Why? There's nothing there. Most of the soldiers were sent to Blackstone to die. It is an empty city. The Easterners will take it, perhaps sooner than anyone thinks. Long have they coveted the Castle of Blades.
Terin didn't answer, focusing on one trudging step after another.
"You're going there to die," Fay said.
"No,"
Terin said quickly. Truthfully, when he'd first made the decision, he had wondered whether this was an attempt to kill himself.
"But no, it's the only way I know how to protect her from afar," he explained.
"She doesn't need protection."
"I know, but that doesn't mean I can stop trying."
And there it was, the truth of the matter. So long as Anis had breath in her lungs and blood in her veins, he would never stop trying to protect her.
"I can't be near her, but I can't be away from her either."
It was an irony he knew he might never make sense of. Thus they were headed to Darin, rather than simply disappearing from the face of the earth forever, like Terin had originally intended.
"You're a good man," Fay said.
"Not good enough."
"For what? For Anis? Did you think to ask her? Did you consider her feelings on the matter?"
Terin stopped, whirling around.
"She doesn't know what's inside me. No one does. I'm dangerous. I hit her. In my bloodlust, the monster raging inside me, I couldn't recognize her. I hurt her. I could have. I might have. I couldn't control."
He sank to his knees, the heat cooling in his chest, the sting of tears pricking his eyes. Fay kneeled beside him, roped an arm around his shoulders, and rested her cheek on his armored shoulder.
"And yet sometimes you're as dangerous as a puppy," she said.
An exhausted laugh burst from Terin's lips.
"A rabid puppy, perhaps."
"Look, Anis isn't dead, and neither are you. In this world, during this time of war, that's more fortune than most of us get. Don't give up on yourself when no one else has."
With that said, she stood and walked away into the building storm. Her shadow trailed behind her, seeming to darken more with each step. 4. The Western Kingdom, Night's End. Rhea Loren. Queen Rhea Loren, first of her name, felt as if she'd lived three lives. First, her childhood, a time that felt happy, but wasn't. Back then, she'd thought she was strong, beautiful, untouchable, unbetrayable. Rebellious, but innocent. But she wasn't any of those things. She was young and naive. She'd fooled even herself. Second, the shortest of her three lives, passed in an instant, a time of pain and fear and brokenness and anger. And then, like a match struck in the dark, enlightenment, truth, transformation. In that second life, as short as it was, she'd grown up. She'd become strong, powerful. She'd killed without remorse. She'd tortured without guilt. Third was her current life. In this life, she was a woman, a queen, a unifier, a battlefield general, the commander of monsters, the defender of the West. She was strong, confident, and she was broken. So broken. None knew the truth about what she felt on the inside. None could see that weakness, or she feared they would smash her into a million pieces. None could see the child growing inside her. Without her mother, without her father, without grey, rutting Aris, she was alone. Even with the child in her belly, she was alone.
"At least I still have Ennis," she thought now. "At least I saved him."
That was good, right? That was merciful, wasn't it? Even she didn't know anymore. Her childhood beliefs flipped upside down and drowned in the sparkling waters of the Bay of Bounty, pulled under by a thousand-tentacled monster known as Rathos. Ennis stood nearby now, just another one of her guardsmen. His disguise was effective. His blonde beard was thick, covering his Loren jawline and cheekbones. His hair had been shorn close to his scalp and was covered by a helmet. Two scars had been cut into each cheek. He did it himself.
It was those scars people would see when they looked upon him, not the resemblance to her executed cousin, Ennis Loren. He was Ben Gentry now, a lifetime soldier who'd been promoted to Royal Guardsman after most of them had been killed by the King's Bane. None would suspect his true identity. She turned her thoughts away from Ennis, Ben. Her people were waiting, whispering to each other, pointing at the three red-clad women standing in a line beside her. Rhea let the moment simmer just a little longer, and then said, "This is an auspicious occasion. Though we are saddened by the deaths of the three, we know they have gone to meet Wrath in the seventh heaven. Our God's Furies shall receive the rewards they earned during their lives of righteousness and service." The growing child inside her kicked, and she almost cried out. "Soon," she thought, "soon I will tell them about you." At least the morning sickness had largely disappeared, thank Wrath. She refocused on the heads nodding in the crowd. Her people believed her. They trusted her. The Saviour of the West, some were beginning to call her. It was possible she'd had several of the Furies spread the nickname around the city. "But, alas, this is a time of threats and war, of sin and fear. A time of dark magic. The rumours many of you have heard are true. Our largest forest, the Tangle, burns. Some say it was caused by the evil power of the South, but I reject this. The largest fires are caused by a single spark, that is all. The fires will smoulder down to nothing, and we will survive, as we always have. We cannot dwell on rumours, or rumours of rumours. We cannot dwell on the deaths of the three. We must move on, and honour their sacrifice with our actions, with our devotion to Wrath. Thus, today we will anoint the new three, before Wrath and the people of the Holy City, not as replacements, but as sisters in righteousness." More heads nodding, more looks of awe, craned necks to stare up at the dais. Before today, this kind of ceremony had been conducted behind closed doors, but not any more. Rhea knew it was another opportunity to be seen, to gain favour amongst her people. "These three Furies have taken the oaths, and now need only a royal blessing, which I shall offer humbly before Wrath. Approach." The chosen three, women Rhea had hand-picked from the Furium, three warriors who had fought for her in the Bay of Bounty, kneeled before her, heads bowed. They all had red hair, though that was not the natural colour. All Furia used the same hair dye when they entered the Furium. They were all strong, their muscles taut under their red clothes. Anise touched the tops of their heads in succession, and whispered the blessing. "You are the three, the chosen, Wrath's warriors in this land. You are one and the same. You will have God's strength in your bodies, and wisdom in your minds, and courage in your hearts. You shall not fear death. You shall serve Wrath for all your days. Amen." As each of the three's heads raised, the people said, "Amen." Rhea knew this solemn occasion was not the time for another war speech, and sometimes less was more. She turned on her heels and walked back into the castle, her guardsmen shadowing her footsteps. Somewhere off to the left she could feel Ennis's presence, feel his eyes burning into her. She refused to meet his gaze. She avoided the temptation to rest her hand on her swollen belly, hidden beneath the shapeless purity dress she wore. Earlier she'd sent a stream to Faria, a message for Grian Ironclad. "I have your brother, Gareth, but I'm willing to trade him for another. Give me Bjorn Stonesledge, the Ironmarked, and you may have Gareth. If not, he dies." Rhea held her breath as she entered the royal stream, a narrow, slow-moving body of water that was fed by the Crimean Sea via an inlet on the western shores, near the Cryptlands. The stream passed via a hole in the castle wall and flowed all the way through the palace grounds. Along this portion of the stream, a thick grove of inkreeds grew, making it the perfect location for sending and receiving messages. Years earlier, the method of communication known as streaming had been discovered, and was now used throughout most of the Four Kingdoms.
Several of the stream workers straightened up when they saw her enter, looking nervous and uncomfortable. It was unusual for a lady or lord of the court to enter the stream, much less a queen. Most received their messages by royal couriers, who delivered scrolls all day long. Brea breathed out, looking at the clear waters of the stream, which burbled along happily. "What news from the east?" she asked, to no one in particular. The nervous-looking stream workers glanced at each other. Finally, a woman, slender-looking, despite the thick purity frock she wore, stepped forward.
"We have received no response, Your Highness."
It took all of Rhea's efforts to hide her reaction. Anger and frustration burned beneath her neutral expression.
"Pity," she said. "Please keep me apprised of any news."
She thought of the burning tangle, how her scouts had said the flames were creeping from tree to tree, bush to bush, vine to vine, slowly consuming the forest, almost like the sands of an hourglass tumbling into the abyss.
"Of course, Your Highness."
She started to turn away to leave, but then the woman said,
"Incoming stream."
Slowly, Rhea twisted her head back to look. Sure enough, dark, inky symbols were forming on the surface of the clear water. Words, sentences, sent from somewhere, a sheet of parchment dipped into the water, a message written with ink from the reeds harvested in this exact location, disappearing only to reappear right here, right now, almost instantaneously. On another day, at another time, Rhea might have been amazed, but not today. She watched the slender stream worker wade into the creek, carrying a blank sheet of parchment, which she sank into the water over the still-forming words. The words clarified, soaking into the paper. With trembling hands, the woman lifted it, clambering back onto dry ground. Though she was buzzing with anticipation, Rhea pretended to wait patiently as the woman dabbed the wet sheet with a dry cloth.
"It's a message for you," the woman announced.
"From Grian Ironclad."
"Please,"
Rhea said, her voice even.
"Bring it here."
Obediently, the woman handed her the flattened scroll. Rhea scanned it, her excitement building with each line.
"Queen Rhea Loren, first of your name. Although I am surprised to hear of Gareth's appearance in the West, perhaps I shouldn't be. After our defeat at Raider's Pass, his mind became addled. He is of no value to me, but he is my brother all the same. I will make this trade. Bring Gareth to the Bridge of Triumph 3 days hence. I will deliver Bjorn Stone Sledge the Ironmarked. A man for a man, though I fear you shall receive the better end of the deal. Your eastern counterpart, King Grian Ironclad."
"Yes,"
Rhea said.
"Your Highness,"
the stream worker said. But Rhea wasn't listening, already turning away. For the first time in history, the West would have one of the fate marked. Rhea was going to celebrate. It was time to carve her new fury's faces. If you enjoyed this audiobook, let us know. Take a quick moment to rate and review it on Audible, so we know we're bringing you audiobooks you'll love.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.